Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
All right, so Rob, how is the weather?
Near the Bay. How's the weather today? The weather, you know, I came close to wearing I decided to dress up for Beth, but I came close to wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Nice.
Because I was busy looking at my June schedule, travel schedule, and I always go to the NBA Hawaii. And I thought maybe I'll wear a Hawaiian shirt, given that it's the middle of winter everywhere else. But the weather here, I'm in north of San Francisco, and the weather is very, very good. What about in Austin, Texas? Are you having any ice storms or anything?
No, it's lovely. It is a little cool for Austin, but it's 55 degrees and bright and sunny. It's a little warmer than it is in North Carolina, isn't it, Beth?
Oh yeah, we're trucking along about 45 today and expecting freezing rain tonight and snow. My son in the mountains is going to get between 3 and 5 inches of snow tonight. So,
oh my gosh.
And it's going to rain all day tomorrow and be in that like 45 degree range. And that's just about as miserable as you can get weather-wise, in my opinion.
Did you get your milk and eggs and bread?
I went to the store yesterday for wine. Back with milk and eggs. And I'm telling you, there was a run on kidney beans, hamburger, tomato sauce, milk, and bread. I was like, people, come on.
It's always the
Beth, are you working from home? Are you at home now or are you in your office?
I'm in my office now. I'm flex. So I do both. I live about 7 miles from my office. So it's not, you know, a bad commute. You know, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a traffic jam takes about 3 minutes.
It seems like, and I know we're kind of plunging ahead. I know this is before Melissa, you give the normal introduction, but Beth, you know, obviously during the pandemic, a lot of companies went to work from home. Yep. And people just got used to working from their home office and just never really kind of went back. Did your credit union have a policy? Okay, everybody back, you know, as of a certain date, or is it flexible?
We're still very flexible. We've got some people that are permanent remote. We've got some people that are flex and primarily at home, some that are in. We do have like director level and up. So director, VP, SVP, executive management level is in 3 days a week. And we're going to move to manager level and up in 3 days a week in March. But like for the mortgage staff, my group, my operational group, they're in 2 days a week and out three. And as long as we can, you know, maintain a reasonable amount of productivity and monitor what we're doing, we're pretty good with that.
Good.
All right. Well, I'll kick us off then, because we're like diving into the meat of some of our discussion, which I love, but I want to make sure everybody knows who Beth is. So thank you guys for joining us. Excited to have a fantastic conversation with the brilliant Beth Eller from True Lion Credit Union. And as always, joined by Rob Christman. Beth, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited about some of the things that we have in store for everybody.
Me too. Thank you, Melissa. I'm so glad to be here. Always, always glad to jump in with TMC. And anytime I can talk to you and to Rob, it's a great day.
Tell everybody a little bit about True Lion Credit Union. Like what, you know, not everybody, we've had the privilege of knowing each other for a while because we were in North Carolina together for so long. And kind of friendly competitors in the marketplace. Tell everybody a little bit about True Lion Credit Union. What makes you guys unique? What, you know, how big are you in the marketplaces that you serve?
Thank you for asking. And I can tell you are from North Carolina because you say True Lion, not Truliant. We get that a lot when we get out of the South. We're about a $5 billion credit union in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, and we have about 37 branches, about 350,000 members, and it's been a lot of fun. I've been here since 2019, and we've really had a great run, a lot of fun in growth in the mortgage group. Of course, last year was a bit challenging in that regard, but We've grown into a full service lender in that time and have really pushed into the technology space with electronic closings and trying to move into that area. And really just continue to look forward to more of that in the kind of the Southeast.
And you guys are North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, primarily North Carolina, South Carolina.
Before Melissa goes berserk because you brought up technology and electronic closings so before she works herself into a frenzy. How does one become a member of your credit union? Because I'm going to be the fly in the ointment here to some extent. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days, you used to have to work for Lockheed, to join the Lockheed credit union.
Right.
Or you used to, be a teacher to join the teacher's credit union. How does one join your credit union?
So you can, anyone is open to join. You do have to be, we can serve anyone. We're not tied to any employer, any segment or group of people. So we're a community-based credit union. And there was a lawsuit back, I think, in the 80s, maybe, where that was resolved, that credit unions could move outside of their specific member base. And for us, we just typically look for somebody who lives, works, or even worships in the areas that we serve. And they just apply for, application like you would for a lot of places for the credit. And you go online, fill out a little application. And if we're going to lend you money, then you do have to have a savings account here with a whopping $5 in it.
How much?
A big $5. I think we're moving to 25 this year. it's an inflationary market.
So, I always, there's a lot of things to admire about a credit union. And I would tell independent mortgage banks, especially, or mortgage broker shops, look, they would be griping about whatever about a credit union. And I said, you know what? I said, credit union in their community, you can go there like Friday afternoon. Maybe they're going to have a hot dog bake out in the parking lot, or a clown with popcorn and a jumpy thing in their parking lot. Is very community oriented. That IMBs and mortgage brokers don't really have. And is that still the case?
It absolutely is. It's interesting. So I've been in mortgage lending for 37 years now. And I was at banks or independents until 2019 when I came to Treliant, and had heard all of those kind of things about credit unions they don't have any regulation. They don't have any guidelines. They can do whatever they want. And, they're not for profit and they don't pay taxes, and really had a misperception to some extent of what they're about. They are very community oriented. They are very member focused and driven, because you have shareholders, you don't have stock. And so your members really are who, in essence, own the credit union. And so you take them very seriously. And we do things like our branches have TV screens that kids can come in and sit down. There's a kid area where a kid can come in and sit down and play while the parents are in line. We have a mascot called Truceratops, who dresses up like a triceratops, obviously, but goes out to events to represent Treliant. We have a community engagement area, and they focus on true community events that are not your typical like chamber event or, going out somewhere to be seen with people you want to be seen with. It's true community work. So there is a real take care of your member and your employees feel in a credit union.
So I had heard about Truceratops. is there any truth to the rumor that Truceratops is actually an ex loan officer who couldn't get a job somewhere and so became the mascot? Is that under that costume?
Rob, don't be telling my secrets.
Sorry. Truceratops. Maybe I should apply because I've got a bubbly, outgoing personality. Where am I? Oh, so you mentioned something that I wanted to bring up before Melissa dives into the technology component of this. And that is, since we're talking about credit unions have this great reputation. And when you talk to a credit union employee, they've been there you know, since the Eisenhower administration or whatever it might be. You hear, though, about, you know, obviously the tax situation. Oh, they don't pay income tax. Yeah. But I also hear that people are curious about how the credit union industry, you know, instills this loyalty mm-hmm. into employees. Because when you talk to an IMB, not to pick on IMBs, but I will a little bit, but when you talk to a sales manager, when you talk to a loan officer, oh, I got to pay my LOs, you know, a point and a half, or they're going to flee. It's point and a half, you know, blah, blah, blah. And obviously compensation is a huge part of the IMB issue in terms of profitability. But when you talk to a bank or a credit union, they're not paying, you know, a point and a half. And yet you have originators who stay and mm-hmm. who like it and who thrive. Is that ever an issue when you're trying to hire an originator? Is it an issue at the board level? I mean, how does it work behind the curtain?
For Treliant, we do have a fairly market competitive comp plan. We're not at the point and a half kind of independent level, but we're more in line with the bank level of what you would see. And that was a change, you know, to move to that model. But I think a lot of the loyalty that you get comes from the fact that you are, as a credit union, designed to some extent within reasonableness, do what is best for the member or right for the members. So we have a huge portfolio of products. And so if someone doesn't quite exactly, you know, fit a guideline, or we can figure out what to do with them, we will. We'll do I-10 loans. We'll do 100% loans. We'll do limited credit, all with very built out guidelines, a lot of controls in place. It's not, I kind of had an impression that a lot of credit unions were just kind of open season and they would make kind of any loan and put it on the books and not worry about it. And we're not that way at all. But we do have that flexibility, Rob. And the other thing is there is a culture of care and a culture of understanding that the members own the institution. And so you really want to try to do what's right by them. And in saying that, we are still driven we look at profitability, we look at income, we look at capital ratios, we have loan to share ratios, we're regulated much the way any bank I ever worked at was. But you also are not driven by the shareholder of the stock in the way that a bank is, because you know that you don't have that expectation in the market of where you are. So it is a softer way to lend, if I could say that a little bit. But that doesn't mean that we're not serious about it.
Good answer. Well, thank you. How long, I mean, more all mortgage reports up to you, your originators, how long has the longest, person with the most tenure been there?
In my department, I believe it is 18 years.
Wow. That speaks nice.
Long. Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun place to be. I've done IMBs. I've done banks. I've done it all.
Yeah. I mean, and you never know when Triceratops is going to barge through the door into some board meeting, right?
I'm going to send you a picture of her.
I would pay money.
Oh, it's a her.
Rob in a Triceratops costume. That would be amazing.
as a quick aside, I got a master's in business from Cal, and Cal's mascot is named Oski the bear. And Oski doesn't do much, just kind of walks around and postures and so forth. But it's a big mystery. There's like an Oski society about who, like a fraternity about who gets to be Oski. And you never know who Oski really is, whether it's a man or a woman or what, a student or a, who knows. But you mentioned Triceratops as a she. So
I believe Triceratops is a she. That's true. I would say one other comment to you. One of the things I felt about the credit union world is credit unions, I think, have to some extent filled the space that a lot of community banks had. you know, you went through all the merger and acquisition years in the, you know, 2000 up to about 2015, 16, where a lot of those community banks got gobbled up, and Melissa and I both know about that stuff. But I think credit unions have kind of filled back in that space, and that's why there's a lot of consumer comfort with a credit union.
Very good.
Okay, can I talk about innovation a little bit, Ralph? Are we ready for that?
I'm never ready for innovation, Melissa. You know that by now.
I've been sitting like on my hands waiting to talk to Beth about her RON strategy because really, Beth, you came on board. I mean, you had full RON, you know, implemented and launched in the credit union but in 2019, right? 2020.
So we did IPINs in 2020. We did our first IPIN because North Carolina didn't allow RON at the time. And we've done a lot of e-closings. We love that phrase. We call it easy close is what we've coined it at True Lion. And that's our preferred method to close, whether it's a hybrid, whether it's an IPIN, and North Carolina has passed RON, and we have done RON closings now. In North Carolina, we're calling it REN, Remote Electronic Notarization. And the bill has passed, but all the framework behind it has not gone into place, but we can still do them under the Emergency Video Notarization Act. If you want all those acronyms, you got RON, REN, and EVN in there. So, but
what was the last one?
EVN, Emergency Video Notarization. So that's what North Carolina passed in COVID in order to be able to do RON closings without a RON law.
Yeah. Well, North Carolina's Secretary of State had really worked pretty hard to implement a whole bunch of things in order to make that possible. But there's still this kind of pulse in the industry that RON closings are just a little bit more challenging, not necessarily operationalizing it, but really it's around, you know, educating attorneys or title companies or, you know, ensuring that, you know, software programs are all working the right way together, that ensuring that the counties and municipalities that, you know, that they're needing to record things in, except, you know, e-recording type documents. And so, you know, as you think about all the layers that you guys had to kind of come across, what are you still seeing in that space today that may be able to help? It may be some guidance on things that may be able to help those that are in that conundrum of how do I navigate, you know, all these different municipalities and all these different states that we're in and, you know, all these different title companies or attorneys that we do business with.
Yeah, it's an interesting place to be. There is still a lot of pushback from the legal community, whether it's title agencies or attorneys. And I think that's the biggest place where we struggle with adoption. And I understand their concerns. You know, I always say whenever someone signs a purchase offer to buy a home, they do it electronically. They do DocuSign and sign it. They don't go in front of an agent and wet sign documents. Whenever you disclose a mortgage loan to them, you disclose everything electronically for the most part, and they send their documents back to you through a secure portal. So why do we think a consumer wants to go and sit down and sign a stack of wet paper documents that's the first time they've ever seen them and spend an hour and a half trying to go through and understand that legal documentation? In an electronic closing, we get their documents to them 5 to 7 days in advance in a preview-only mode so they can go in and look at those documents. They can ask questions of the settlement agent. They can ask questions of the real estate agent, of us as the lender. So the process doesn't cut anyone out of the entire mix of things. You still have to have that settlement agent there. And in some ways, they play a more critical role in what you do. But it just gives the consumer time to really understand the transaction at a better level. I have, as I say, I've got 28 and 30-year-old boys, and we have this saying in our house, and it's TLDR, too long, didn't read. there's another acronym for you. They're not going to sit there and read some big, long document in a rush. And I think in the industry, we've all joked about, we've all had, you know, an engineer or an attorney or someone who sits down and says, I'm going to read every word. And they start to question you on a clause or a phrase and give everybody time to, you know, really be able to appreciate and understand the documents and the seriousness of what they're signing. And that's the one of the things I think that e-closing really brings to the table for people is more awareness. And it's a more seamless process. You're electronically signing from beginning to end.
So Beth, I had a question though. when I talk to folks and they say, you know, we're technologically speaking, we're good to go on electronic, you know, closings, notarization, so on. But, you know, half of the counties that we do business in, they aren't there.
Right.
They won't accept it. And or we have, you know, our investors won't buy those loans. How have you overcome? I mean, how do you deal with this county situation, especially in the South, where, you know, Mary Jo may have been there 28 years and she doesn't, you know.
Registered deeds office doesn't want to see it yet. So in North Carolina, we are fortunate. Secretary Marshall and Melissa referenced her. Our Secretary of State has really led an e-commerce platform for about 15 years. And she has a mortgage closing platform, that a committee that I happen to be a member of and I'm honored to serve with her. But she really has pushed that at the state level. So out of our 100 counties, we have 97 that will accept electronic notarization deeds, which is very helpful. South Carolina, on the other hand, is very different than that. You know, there's a lot of pushback there at the registration level. So you still can do a hybrid RON closing or a hybrid e-closing and even in those areas and just not electronically sign your security instruments, but you can do everything else electronically. Fannie and Freddie accept e-notes, and a lot of the large aggregators do, like Mr. U.S. Bank, for example, someone we sell some loans to, they will accept e-notes. And so if you've got Fannie Freddie accepting them, we also use them for collateral with the Federal Home Loan Bank out of Atlanta. We were their first member that was able to transfer e-notes for collateral against our lines for them. They accept them, you know, MERS fully accepts them. So all of the big regulatory agencies or the entities in the industry are very comfortable with the e-platform. It's really more down, as you say, at the registered deeds level, at the attorney level, at the street level. But there's no reason not to do a hybrid closing and at least get all your internal docs signed electronically.
Beth, we've got a great question in the chat that I want to bring up. One of our friends at Nicolet Bank says, we also do hybrid and RON closings. How are you able to get the closing docs out to the borrower 5 to 7 days prior to closing? Have you balanced with the title company before that?
You know, as a practice, we start working on our CD as soon as we get a conditional approval. And we may not have the final CD in that 5 to 7 day doc package, but we do have all of the other documents in there. And we do try to get the, you know, final CD numbers, obviously, as quickly as we can out to them in that. But we open up the rest of the package for preview for them to look at. And we use Encompass as our LOS system. And we use Doc Magic to generate our e-packages. And they've been great to work with. And so the day of closing, which is 12:01 Hawaii time, Rob, we open up the package and borrowers then can start to sign those documents. So when they get to the closing table, the things that are left for them to sign, if they're doing a hybrid or just the notarial docs, if they do an IPIN or a RON, then they can do that remotely in the closing. Our remote closings take about 20 minutes on average in time.
So getting back to an issue, because I'm getting some texts here about the county level. So in California, for example, a lot of counties don't. But where you do business, when you say 97 out of 100 counties do, that move came from the top down.
Secretary of State level, right.
Not from the kind of the bottom up.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And that's very helpful. And I do see Patrick has asked the Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta allows e-notes. They do. We were the first member of their pilot program. And I think they've got 4 or 5 other members in there as pilots, but they're on their way to opening it up, I believe.
Do you have a special acronym for the hybrid closings? Like H? Never mind.
True Ceratops.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, obviously we, I'll shift focus just a little bit because, you know, I think one of the things that North Carolina is extremely lucky to have is the Secretary of State that has really pushed that leadership that has really seen the value in, you know, in electronic closings. And I think that that's really, really key. to all states. I hope everybody gets to that point where they can have that leadership. But there's also, you know, this time of year, everybody's kind of looking at kind of summarizing their last year from a production standpoint, starting to look at, oh my gosh, I've got to go through my financial audits for FHA. I've got to look at my, you know, HMDA data, you know, all of those sort of things are kind of in everybody's purview right now. You know, I wanted to take a little bit of time and talk about HMDA data, particularly because most everybody is doing some fair lending testing, and HMDA is kind of the kind of foundation for that. You know, obviously with the CFPB's recent kind of communication around Wells Fargo and their pricing exceptions, kind of not meeting their expectations. You know, how are you looking at that as you're starting to think through your fair lending testing in the coming year, and how you're also just giving your, you know, your salespeople, those people that have been with you for so long and are so loyal, the opportunity to meet the consumer's needs where they you know need to be able to compete right now too.
You know, it's tough because it's such a competitive market, as we know, with the lack of inventory out there. I mean, we routinely see rates come across. We're like, what? I mean, there's no way they're losing money making this loan. I think we're all saying that right now. And I believe it. Some people are losing money making loans. But we do require and have for a long time, you know, some type of a competitive quote to ping to show why we're giving a concession. And we do have concessions centrally controlled, and I think a lot of people do that. LockDesk has a certain tolerance that they can make a decision on if they've got a competitive offer, and then without that, it rolls up the chain. You know, and we try to stick within those bounds as much as we possibly can. I truly believe that we are so highly overregulated as an industry that it's a clamp on the ability to do the right thing the right way sometimes. You know, there are times when you should be able to make a competitive decision, you know, and look at that. And we do things too, like we have all of our HMDA data grayed out. Our underwriters cannot see that data. They have no access to it. As soon as the loan officer keys it in, it's in a hidden behind everything. So we try to do everything we can to make sure that we are fair and equitable and treating everyone the same. But there are times that you get that quote in and you go, there's just no way, you know, they can be doing that. And so we use the quotes that we have in hand and try to make the best decision we can.
It's tough. You know, the balance of doing the best thing you possibly can for your members, giving your loan officers the tools that they need to be successful as well, and complying with everything that the CFPB is you know, asking you to comply with at the same time. Yeah. It's a tricky thing to navigate. And hopefully all that documentation, you know, you guys are doing the right things and helping your team and helping your members and documenting things right.
We try to. I'm just confusing as it is. Sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but do you service your loans, or do you have a sub-servicer?
No, we service. We're Fannie Freddie, both Fannie Freddie seller servicer direct, and then we have our own portfolio of our, you know, products that we put on the books as well. And we sell some service released. We don't service government loans, for example. So we sell all those service released or housing products for North Carolina, South Carolina housing. Those are service released. And we'll make decisions at times just based on where the market is. We may be in a position where the credit union wants more non-interest income, so we'll sell stuff service released for a while, or we'll just decide to portfolio everything for a while, depending on what yields are. So we're pretty fluid with all that.
And do you have a portfolio retention team or loan officer or group of loan officers who specialize in protecting your portfolio?
You know, we did that a couple years ago in 2021, we really focused on that with rates dropping as low as they were and trying to make sure we were retaining as many loans as we could. And of course, last year wasn't a concern. Looks like we're getting ready to move back into that more in this year too. And that's one of the things we're trying to look at as predictive indicators of who might be at risk. What loans should we look at and try to reach out to those people preemptively?
How are you handling the topic that's been very popular in the last year or so, which is, you know, the credit, the cost of credit, running credit reports, hard pulls, soft pulls, trigger leads, and so forth. Are you in charge of vendor management, for example, and how are you, if at all, dealing with the increasing cost of running a borrower's credit?
You know, I am not in charge of that, and thankful for that. I have a wonderful person here who does that, but we have had discussions about it, and it certainly I end up invariably in the conversation because we're a fairly small shop. But there is a real tangible cost increase now in credit reports and what they look like. And like most lenders, we've just absorbed that cost. You know, historically, if we're out there talking to someone and doing a pre-qual, we're going to run their credit as soon as we can and just absorb that cost and hope to get the loan one day. I don't know how we solve that as an industry. I really don't. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mentioned in my commentary once in a while, and I mention it because I've heard it mentioned, and that is charging borrower up front to make them stickier. I've heard that. I haven't really seen anybody actually implement it per se, but there's talk of that going on out there. Because it is an expense, and lenders have tight enough margin as it is, not to pay for, you know, all the credit reports that they run that for loans that never fund or right. The loans that fund somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so it is an expense, and every lender out there is looking at not only credit reports but loan origination system expenses and all, you know, doctoring expense, all of these things, and the vendor management role has become so important at so many lenders where, you know, it used to be like you'd hardly ever see or hear about vendor management. And now it's like a C-suite level position with some lenders because it's so expensive to originate loans. I don't have a solution. And there's a lot of confusion out there. And I think the credit reporting agencies are trying to do what they can in terms of alleviating the confusion that is out there and trying to work with lenders to restructure or to sharpen their pencils. But, you know, I mean, credit reporting agencies need to make a profit too, for example.
Sure.
And so, but it's a very tough environment. There aren't any easy answers that I've heard.
And it's not going to be easier either with the whole transition of, you know, tri-merge to bi-merge. You know, we've got a lot of change happening in that space too, that'll keep the confusion, you know, and not having a solid answer for quite some time. I think, I don't know that there's going to be a solution that, you know, we wave a magic wand on and say, this is how we all kind of save money. I think until we get through this extra space of ambiguity around how that transition is going to occur, we're still going to be in this environment. Beth, do you agree?
Totally agree with that. You know, and one of the things that I see too and think is that technology moves at such a fast pace now. If you've got a long-term contract with a vendor, you become very inefficient. You know, and it's real easy just to stay with the same vendor and roll through with that vendor rather than go out and try to look at someone else. And now out in the wide, wide world, there are so many options for so many different things that it's just hard to keep up with all of the advancements that are there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, credit reporting has kind of replaced a topic that was on the hot seat for a while, and that was appraisals and appraisers and appraisal management companies. And, you know, during the pandemic, there were, you know, a year and a half, 2 years there where appraisers were, you know, they could charge whatever they wanted to, and there was a lack of appraisers, and it took forever in some areas to go out and get an actual appraisal. And that's died down to a great extent because volumes are down. But, you know, the problem still exists about how do we bring new appraisers into the industry and how do AMCs really function? Are they really useful or are they just a pain in the neck? How do you guys handle the appraisal process?
Oh, I would tell you, we work with an AMC that we absolutely love. We have a great working relationship with Community Bank Real Estate Solutions out of North Carolina, and they really partner with us and are there as we walk through everything online. I give you a great example. We called them this week. You know, there's the new guidance coming out on SSRs. If you've got a 3.5 or greater, you know, there's all the stuff you can go in and do in the data collateral portal, and you can change things. You can try to mitigate some of the commentary in there or see what they're looking at in the appraisal from the GSEs. And we called up our AMC and said, hey, are you guys aware of this? And they were like, oh, wow, let us look at that. We're going to start, you know, working on that, and made a process where they would partner with us to make sure that gets done. And that's been great. I've also worked at places where I've had AMCs that were, you know, big and difficult to get anything through, and you didn't feel like you really had a voice. And it's one of those things that I think if you can get to a place where you have that great relationship and you have someone that you can work with as a partner, then it's okay. You know, it works fine. But when you're a cog in the machine in any place, it's hard. And I think that's part of the credit reporting issue too, is that we all deal with the big national vendors for credit reports. And so in some ways, your opinion doesn't matter. You know, and it's not that they don't provide you good service or do what they can, but it is a vendor with a service that they're going to provide to you, and that's it. You know, you're going to get the tri-merge report or the two-score report, and you're going to change this profile, and we're going to charge you this. And I'm with you, Rob. I think they deserve to make a profit just like anyone else, but you're just on the downstream end of that.
Yeah, I noticed
it's incredibly important for sure.
Yeah, Melissa, did you notice Beth was pretty quick to jump on mentioning her AMC, and not so quick to jump on mentioning whoever her
I've used that same AMC, and they are lovely. She should have every right to mention them. They're
so Beth. Go ahead. Sorry.
We're all up at time. Do you want to ask one final question?
I want to ask one final question. So Beth, you what'd you have for breakfast today? No, Beth, you've been doing this 37 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you if your kids are in the business. I'm not going to ask you about when you're going to retire, but obviously you're part of senior management there. What do you spend your day, your week doing? Is it recruiting? Is it dealing with problem loans? Is it dealing with vendors? Is it dealing with senior management? Is it dealing with the community? What is your day like?
Organized chaos is what I would say. You know, honestly, it can be a mix of all of those things. Certainly, we've hired a great staff here, and we have, I'm just really pleased with the department overall and how we run. And so employee retention is one thing that I think about. And that's as simple as walking in the floor every morning when people are on board and saying, hey, how you doing? What's going on? And, you know, really trying to stay in touch with your LOs and what do they need in their markets. And I think retention is a form of recruiting. We're constantly recruiting. We're constantly looking for new people and new ways to improve, and really for ways to solidify our value within the credit union. Is, you know, as you've had all the things that have come into play, like CECL and valuations and loan loss reserves, and you know, how do you fit into the overall mix of what they want in their portfolio and their financials? You know, how do you stay relative in that area? So I spend a lot of time at the executive level working on financials and looking at portfolio management and what we're doing and what are our yields and, you know, all those kind of things. And then we also spend a lot of time at the operational level. And I don't ever want to get to a place where I can't answer a question for an employee. I may not know the answer to a specific guideline, but I'm sure going to go find it out for you if somebody calls me up and says, hey, can we look at this, or why can't we do that?
A great example of fantastic.
And how long has Triceratops been in that role?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out for you.
Find out. Shoot me an email.
All right. Well, Beth, thank you so much for joining us. This was a fantastic conversation. There's literally like a stream of comments in the chat right now about how great it was to hear the credit union.
Thank you.
And so I really appreciate you taking some time and sharing it with everybody. Thank you everybody for joining us today. We had a fantastic conversation and loved reading in the chat. We will see you guys again next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Thank you, Beth. Bye.
Thank you.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.